intro.
Hi, and welcome to Last Man Standing. Here with me, Paul Stevenson on Republic Broadcasting Network. And, of course, do go to the homepage on Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org, to keep us on the air and where we can indulge ourselves in the fine... what's the word I'm looking for? Aromas. The fine aromas of free speech. And where we can talk about everything, and we do. So... keep us on the air, because I think this platforms like this are unique, where we do talk about everything freely. None of us are paid, so I guess we can. We don't have to be censoring ourselves or worrying about our income on YouTube views or strikes or any of that sort of nonsense. So, yeah, if you go to the homepage, the easiest way to do that is just to navigate to the various options where you can pay by credit card, PayPal, you can send in donations physically, checks, mail orders, all that sort of stuff into... Republic Broadcasting in Texas, where the address is there. I don't know it off the top of my head. Okay, so I'm joined with Dr. Patrick Slattery. Thank you for joining me, Patrick.
Well, thank you very much. And yeah, we do speak freely because we're nobody's paying us. We're speaking for free. So we're not speaking expensively and we're not speaking paidly. We are speaking freely.
Well, that's the upside, I guess, of not... being paid for what you do, because you know, if you were, and of course there are people, I mean, we sometimes speculate about, you know, even the likes of Alexander Mercurius and things like that. You know, Alexander Mercurius does an average 100,000 views a video. He does 30 of them a year or a month. He does it every day, and fair play to him. You know, that's pretty hard to do. There are two shows, and he's pretty at one every day, or sorry, about maybe an hour and a half. That amounts to, if you're doing 100,000 a day, that amounts to about 3 million views a month, which I think it's getting into sort of a couple of thousand dollars territory a month on YouTube. So that's an income. And if you get used to that income, well, you're probably not going to talk about certain things because, you know, YouTube won't tolerate it, you know. So we don't have that problem. So I guess blessed are we from that point of view.
Yeah, you know, obviously the downside is that we have to spend a big hunk of our time earning money otherwise. And... So, you know, we can do these shows because you can do shows like this on a part-time basis. But to do things like, for instance, write a book and have the book, you know, cohesive and focused, well done, timely, get it out in a timely manner. That's not something you can do on a part-time. There's a lot of things that to do a lot of primary research, things like that. It's just hard to do on a part-time basis. And so that's. Yeah. That's what we lack. But, you know, in terms of being able to put out, you know, good, timely analysis of what's going on, I think we do a good job of that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, while I'm at it, I you know, I may as well say, if anyone wants to donate, you know, you can do that to me personally as well. If you like the show and the work I do, you can do that on PayPal. So Stevenson with a V_P5 at sky.com. Occasionally, not often, but occasionally, you know, I would get the odd little payment. There's a guy in California, Jordan, who over the years I consider a friend, and occasionally he'll pop $100 into my account. So if anyone likes what I do, you can do that. It all helps. Like we said, we don't get paid for this, but the upside is we can speak freely. But anyway, so the big news of the hour, or in the last 24 hours, is Israel have conducted a strike on Iran. Although, looking at it, I mean, is that it? It reminds me of Muhammad Ali to George Foreman in The Rumble in the Jungle. Is that all you got? I mean, it's a pretty pathetic display if that's the attack, because, you know, the Israelis have been talking this up. You had Olaf Galant, Yolav Galant was talking, you know, big talk when he was saying, and I quote, "Our attack will be deadly, precise, and above all, surprising. They will not understand what happened or how it happened, but they will see the results." So, you know, I don't want to be premature in dismissing the Israelis as limp-wristed with that attack, because, you know, they may well have something else supposedly more serious to come. But I don't know where you saw much of it, but what I did see was a lot of probably Russian air defense systems shooting down these missiles coming in.
That's what I saw. It seemed, Yeah, that's what it seems like. So I think we have to note that we are pre-recording this. This is probably about, 26 hours before showtime, 26 or so. So a little over 24 hours before it's going to air. And therefore, it's like 12, 14 hours after the attack took place. So I guess I first saw it as I was checking into a motel, and the CNN was on in the background, and I could see Israel claims. Was that, no, maybe I had seen it a little bit before that. I'd seen it on Russia Today or something. But and I called Dr. Duke, and then he was trying to see what they were saying about it on American TV, and all they were talking about was how Donald Trump's a fascist on CNN or MSNBC. He didn't even want to watch it on Fox because
literally
Fox
Hitler. Is like,
yeah, well, and if to the extent Fox would cover the Israeli attack, it would all be rah 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 go Israel. So, but then I saw a bit of it on as I was checking into the motel. Then I listened to Al Jazeera. I found a stream of Al Jazeera, and they were talking about it. And then this morning I caught Larry Johnson on Dialogue Works with that Brazilian guy of Iranian descent. And what I'm gathering from these various sources, and in the case of Larry Johnson, the former CIA analyst, he's seen that were posted by Iranians to social media showing the attacks. So there were explosions, but there are no he couldn't find any fires on the ground. He couldn't find any videos of destruction. Lots of videos of explosions in midair, which would seem to indicate these Russian-supplied anti-missile defense systems hitting their targets.
Possibly the before the system. Yeah.
Right. So, and Larry Johnson was saying, well, we don't know for sure yet. The dust hasn't exactly settled, but it may well be that that Iran's and with Russia's system was able to completely block Israel's attack. And this comes, 3.5 weeks after Iran had demonstrated that it can penetrate Israel's American supplied defense system and hit targets at will with its hypersonic missiles and whatnot. So Larry Johnson was saying this might be the best possible scenario because unscathed, Iran doesn't necessarily have to retaliate. So we'll see. Yeah,
I've got to get myself one of them, Patrick. If we get enough donations, I think we might get one of those S-400 systems. They look good.
Yeah,
I think you could talk freely about Jews if you had one of those. So, just go out to the country, buy a big pad, and have an S-400 system there, and just like talk about Jews all day with impunity. Yes, in Sky News Arabia, I didn't know there was such a thing. They reckon that Russia gave Iran a heads up hours before the Israeli strikes began. The report: Russia informed Iran about Israel attacks, which is kind of strange when you consider that some might say that Vladimir Putin's in on it all, in this whole thing. But there he is.
I find that very tiresome. Yeah.
Yeah. You do hear that that idea from time to time that Vladimir Putin, despite BRICS, despite everything he's done to resist and dismantle Western hegemony and support Iran and befriend the most adorable leader in the world, in Kim Jong-un, that somehow he's in on it all, colluding with the Jewish West. But I don't see any evidence for this, really. So, apparently, Russia has reportedly warned Iran of impending Israeli strikes, Sky News Arabia reports. The pictures I saw of this, these are the type of pictures that the Israelis would be proud of with their Iron Dome, because you could see a picture of about probably, six, half a dozen, eight missiles, and it's just boom, 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 just like little lights going out. And it seemed to be working quite effectively. And the Iranians have provided info in terms of, no airports have been affected. Everything's normal. And they apparently targeted Iranian military positions. But like I said, is this it from Israel? If this is their response that they've been preparing for a month, they're even weaker than I thought. But well, maybe it's not. Maybe they've got something else up their sleeve. Maybe, you know, the these are very sneaky people, you know. Even this leak, you know, who knows what's behind that? It might have been Mossad themselves. You know, you just don't know. You don't know what's coming. You don't know what sort of feints are out there, you know, and deceptions. Look over here, look over here, look over here, and then something else happens over there. We'll see. There was apparently three waves. There were three waves of strikes, apparently. And was limited damage.
Yeah, the Israelis themselves are saying, you know, that was their response. That was their retaliation for October 1st.
I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
I mean, I'm not saying you should believe Israelis, but that's they've issued a statement saying that is their response. Now, obviously, they're talking about taking on seven different, like they have a seven front war. What would that be? Obviously, Hamas and Hezbollah and Iran, obviously, and then they've been bombing Syria. You got the Houthis in Yemen, so that gets you up to five. There's the Iraqi forces, Iraqi resistance forces. They're not the government forces, but they operate in Iraq, and so that would be a sixth. I'm not sure who the seventh is supposed to be. Maybe I guess the seventh would be the Palestinians in the West Bank. So that would probably be their seven front war. And so, you know, they were attacking Hamas in Gaza for over a year now. And while they've created massive destruction. And by the way, you know, I was listening to this lecture series on political theory by some professor Calhoun. Nobody had ever heard of before, but it's part of the great lecture series. And it was recorded some years ago. And he was talking about, say, international law and saying, well, you know, we've got these Geneva Conventions. And since the Geneva Conventions, you no longer have you haven't had any examples of aerial bombardment of urban areas the way you did in World War II. You know, you had Dresden, you had Hiroshima, you had aerial bombardment. Now, you know, you look at the Vietnam War, the Americans, they didn't bombard Hanoi in any significant way. So that's a thing of the past. And I was listening to it, and of course I thought, oh, really? Oh, really? So, but that just kind of underscores that the Israelis in bombarding to smithereens Gaza, and now starting it the same on Beirut, it just shows how, abhorrent and how out of step with international norms of that Israel is. They feel completely unrestrained by international norms of behavior. Yeah. So there's that. They're likely to strike out in some other direction. It didn't work well with Iran. Are they immediately going to try something again with Iran? My guess is they'll probably start something with somebody else, or maybe they'll just get back to trying to bombard Beirut into the Stone Age or something. But my feeling is just not going well. And, you know, Netanyahu has been able to rally public support around him, despite having been in a very precarious position, say, 16, 17 months ago, the summer of 2023. But he's managed to rally the public around him with scenes of death and devastation in Gaza, with exploding pagers, with assassinations of you know, foreign enemies, and the and you know, torturing prisoners. The Israeli public seems to really like that. But on the other hand, something like this failed attack against Iran, you know, there's only so long that that Netanyahu can probably stave off his potential political enemies, you know, in the midst of a losing war and a imploding economy with exploding pagers and assassinations. So I don't know. What do you think, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, the state itself is, you know, has proved itself to be, you know, ostensibly the most out of control, violent state that, you know, in modern history, and maybe even in the history of nations itself. Like I said, this is a state that's out of control. And, you know, these are just very strange people. I think most of the watching world looks at these people in a different way. And of course, you know, these are people who believe themselves to be completely superior to everybody else, you know? You know, I mean, the Talmud, for example, is essentially what got Jews in trouble, for the most part, in Christian Europe in their history. You know, oh, they look at themselves as God's chosen people, and that they and they alone have a soul where eternal life is possible, and everyone else, the Goyim, they don't have a soul. You know. And this is what they think, and they've got themselves in trouble and for blasphemies against Jesus Christ, and you know all sorts of horrendous sorts of stuff that raised eyebrows historically, and people like Ben Gavir and Smotrich and these type of guys they believe all this stuff, and then like I said, I mean it's obviously a very much a bête noir of mine that you have Christians supporting this. I mean it's just like incredible. It's got to stop this nonsense. And I'm sorry to say, but most of it is American Christians. And I find it very, very irritating, that level of ignorance that is so widespread among so-called American Christians supporting this stuff. I mean, they're so detached from their European history. It's like a new version of Christianity, which is basically completely designed by and, you know, for the interests of Jews. So people are looking on at this state and their behavior. Incredibly, you still have some people defending them in the West, which is intolerable. And but they have proved themselves to be a bunch of violent little weirdos, which is what they are. They are kind of outlaws, you know, outliers of humanity. And you give them a little state, a little piece of real estate, as you guys call them, you know, land. And look what they do. You know, I mean, I'm sorry, but they don't deserve to survive. I mean, the state is, you know, it's an abomination. You know, these people with their claims, you know, of Jewish land going back 2,000 years and all this nonsense, you know. I mean, it's just a weird little state. You know, if you want to get into the theology of it, it's another story. Even the name Israel. I mean, give it a rest. I mean, in Christian theology, Israel no longer exists. Israel has been seen as a spiritual phenomenon. It's the Israel of God. In other words, people who believe in Jesus Christ, the church. It's like it was seen as a kind of an analogy for what was to come, the fulfillment of spiritually. And Christians don't seem to understand this in the West, where they're supporting this little bit of land. You know, God's not interested in a little bit of land. So anyway, like I said, you know, in Christian theology, and you know, it's in the scriptures, you know, by the New Testament, and the New Testament by the apostles, you know, that Israel is a spiritual phenomenon. They call it the Israel of God. It's not a piece of land. So it really irritates me that they use that name. You know, a bunch of Talmudic and or just secular Jews taking that name, which is a holy name, and conducting, you know, abject violence and disgusting acts towards the Palestinians and anybody who dares, you know, get in the way of these maniacs. So, you know, I hope that justice will be done, because this is just, like I said, it's a total aberration. It's just a weird little place, you know.
Aberration,
It's just a horrible little place and a weird little place with a bunch of very, very strange people. And unfortunately, if the state doesn't survive, well, we have to all absorb them. They'll come into the West.
This is what I wanted to talk about. I wasn't sure whether to get into it immediately or to, because I want to address the you know, Putin being in on it thing. But let's talk about what would be a just or alternatively desirable outcome for Israel. I mean, so Israel's behavior since its founding in 1948 has been absolutely abysmal. And what it's doing now, you know, it's just unprecedented in our lifetime. It could result in, it's going to result in almost certainly in some sort of settlement being imposed on Israel. And the longer Israel is able to continue to commit atrocities, the worse, the more punitive that settlement's going to be. So, you know, the default settlement is just to go back to UN Resolution 242 and other UN resolutions, which really have been accepted over the past decades by pretty much all the actors involved, the Arab states, the neighboring Arab states, the Palestinian Liberation Organization, which has morphed into the Palestinian authorities. They accepted this basic idea of having an independent Palestinian state on only, 22 or 23% of what had been.
Get more tank will save you money every month on gas. I'm Dave Von Kleist, and I noticed increased performance after my first tank of gas. My mileage increased by 2.5 miles per gallon, and I'm saving money on every fill-up. Get more tank is American-made, is used by trucking companies and heavy industry, and is now available to the public. Get more tank works in any gas or diesel engine, cleans your engine, improves performance, reduces emissions, and you'll feel it every time you step on the gas. If you're an owner-operator, farmer, heavy equipment operator, or use any kind of engine from chainsaws, leaf blowers, lawnmowers, ATVs, you name it, contractors, electricians, plumbers, painters, lawn service companies, Get More Tank will save you money and extend the life of your equipment. Hey, if you've got an engine, then Get More Tank. Save your money, save your engine, reduce your emissions, and save the earth with GetMoreTank.com. A 5-pack of GetMoreTank.com is only $22.22 plus shipping. Use the promo code Republic Broadcasting and get 10% off. Get More Tank is EPA registered, doesn't void warranties, and results vary. GetMoreTank.com.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. But I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
Indian authorities, they accepted these this basic idea of having an independent Palestinian state on only, what, 22 or 23% of what had been the British-run mandate of Palestine, and leaving the Jews with the remaining 77, 78%. That they accepted, you know, 50 years ago. Hamas, for all intents and purposes, accepted it about 20 years ago. They talked about a generational ceasefire and let future generations sort out a permanent solution. And so it's been on the table. It's been there for the Jews to take forever, but yet they want more and more and more. And so what would it, so if that's not going to be the settlement, it could be the settlement, but of course if that winds up being the settlement imposed on the Jews, that requires the removal of, say, 700,000 violent religious fanatics from the West Bank, which would, you know, be the geographic core of this future Palestinian state. They're not going to leave without some sort of civil war or something. But as horrible as Israel has been, once this settlement is imposed, some months or potentially maybe even years in the future, is 242 still going to be on the table for the Jews? What about, you know, some people talk about, well, you'll just have a one-state solution. That would be a possibility. And then Jews, you know, are going to lose control, and you'd probably have mass emigration to Western countries. Is that desirable? Do we really, like, it's bad enough having these, you know, 7 million Jews in Israel scheming and being violent and attacking people? Do we want to absorb these 7 million violent, brainwashed Zionist Israelis into our own societies? We have a big enough problem with the Jews that we have here who are less militarized and less violent, maybe somewhat more intelligent,
Bolsheviks that basically dominate our institutions that are already here.
Yeah, but just before I finish that this thought, there might also be a scenario of leaving a rump Israeli state or rump Jewish state around Tel Aviv and its environs, which is where most of the Jews actually live. But then severing off maybe the north Galilee region, which is already depopulated, a Palestinian state could absorb that. Or really the Negev Desert. I mean, the Negev Desert, where you don't have a whole lot of Jews living, but militarily it's been important for them because that's where they have their nuclear facilities. Also, it's given them access to the Red Sea. That could be stripped from them, given to a Palestinian state. So you could have a situation where it's not the Jews who wind up with 78% of the land of the British Mandate of Palestine, but the Palestinians who wind up with the bulk of it, and the Jews have kind of a Singapore-sized state, well, maybe somewhat bigger than Singapore, but a little statelet around Tel Aviv. So I'm just kicking that out there. I mean, honestly, would the people in the Middle East really even want a bunch of Jews around Tel Aviv in their neighborhood where they could potentially cause trouble? They probably wouldn't. It would be an improvement over the status quo. But would we want all those people, all those Jews who are being expelled from Israel, to come to our society to aggravate our existing problem with Jewish supremacism? So that's what I'm kicking out there.
Well, this is the problem because, they have – most of them have dual citizenship. And there's already, by some estimates, some people reckon that as many as maybe a million Jews have already left there. Because, you have the problem in the north where people were – resettled down into central areas of Israel, and Israel's economy has taken a big hit. And then, of course, you have some people who might see the writing on the wall if they're immune from the insanity and the hubris of Israel, thinking it's going to just beat all its enemies in the region and then fulfill this greater Israel plan. Some of them might be skeptical if they've got two brain cells to rub together and look at reality. Those people might have already left. Like I said, any of my times I've been at the airports in the last sort of 6 months, I've seen an unusually high number of Orthodox Jews floating around. They'll come to the West. You guys will probably have a lot of them, and we'll have a lot of them in the village of Germany and everything else. But yeah, unless they're careful, rather than expanding their territory, that they could be obliterated. It could be total annihilation, because they have these grand ideas. I was listening, you hear them. I was listening to Ben-Gavir and some other woman, and they have this, fervorous belief, about certain lands that belong to them and, resettling in Gaza and all the rest of it. So it would be justice that they would be humbled and they would be left with nothing rather than an expanded greater Israel that it would no longer exist. And like I've said before, if it no longer exists, so too will this false doctrine that Christian Zionists believe in, because if there's no Israel, there can be no Christian Zionists, and that will be a good thing as well. But we'll see. It looks like for the minute, they might be have conducted a limited strike to perhaps de-escalate. I don't know. I'm skeptical, because that's not really in the DNA of these people. So I don't know what they intended from the strike, but they either intended to cause much more destruction, they were just simply thwarted by, sophisticated air defense systems, or this was seen as, I don't know, what did they, is this an attempt to sort of keep face and, then de-escalate because they haven't done much damage with a limited attack? But this is, for their own people, their domestic audience, they've been talking up this big strike. I quoted, Ola Gallant at the start of the show, he seemed to be predicting some major surprise with the Iranians, but I don't know. I mean, is this it? I don't think so. I think there's something else up their sleeve. Maybe they're, they like to decapitate, don't they? So I wouldn't be surprised if they, have plans to maybe try it.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because big tech, big pharma, and big brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Hey there, this is Sheila with Hempaze by Mynutra. Why is hempaze better than other CBD options on the market? It's important to point out that the common CBD oil does not contain CBDA or CBGA, and they're only found in fresh or raw hemp products, like hempaze. Hempaze contains the entire plant, minus any stems. This means the product retains the complete genetic code of the plant, which also includes those two vital cannabinoids, CBGA and CBDA. Over and over, experts keep saying the more intact or less processed the hemp plant is, the more effective it is. Happy hemp paste.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org. And visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Call 855-656-8872. Mention RBN.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
Obviously, maybe they're, you know, they like to decapitate, don't they? So I wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, have plans to maybe try and eliminate the Ayatollah, the supreme leader.
They've got
MNA.
Well, I mean, they have the current situation is we're 10 days away from the U.S. presidential election. So you've got a known status quo right now. 10 days from now, things are going to change. So you could wind up with a clear President Trump, or perhaps
is that looking like a done deal now? No, it's probably going to be Trump.
Wouldn't say quite a done deal, but if I was a betting man, I would bet on Trump, and the Las Vegas odds makers are betting on Trump, and he's certainly a 3-2 favorite. I think he's getting close to a 2-1 favorite. The movement, the momentum is entirely in his direction. The Washington Post has announced that it's not going to endorse a candidate, which that comes from Jeff Bezos, and the staff at the Washington Post are upset with that. The same thing happened at the Los Angeles Times. So the Harris campaign is kind of falling apart. She's been having bad interviews, getting bad press, being satirized on a liberal show like Saturday Night Live, bombing when she comes on a liberal talk show like Stephen Colbert. And so it's looking like a clear Trump victory is a distinct possibility. Probably the other distinct possibility, maybe somewhat less. The next most likely scenario would be an election that's close and disputed, which could be with either the Trump seemingly ahead, but shenanigans going on behind the scenes to reverse it, or even Harris seemingly ahead with the Trump people outraged and presenting all sorts of evidence. But so you could wind up post November 5th with a widely accepted president-elect Trump, which is one scenario for Israel and Netanyahu, given that Trump has just been going all out in support of the Jews and Israel. On the other hand, you could wind up with the United States completely preoccupied with this internal struggle over who is going to occupy the White House on January 20th. And in such a scenario, it's like the attention is all going to be turned inward, and its foreign policy would drift. Who knows what would happen? So you could have all sorts of chaos in that situation. So that's how the election's shaping up at this point. But yeah, Netanyahu is trying to strike while the iron's hot, not knowing what the situation is going to be 11 days from now.
Yeah. Well, like I said, this strike seems to be. Also, Damascus was targeted, but I'm not sure what damage was done. But I'm just seeing here all flights from Iran have been canceled amid attacks by Israel. It's from Greg Stoker, a military and geopolitical analyst. I'm seeing this on is it the Times of India?
What does it say when Israel can bomb the capital of a neighboring country, Syria? The bomb is Damascus, and it's not even news.
Yeah, and it does it frequently. People don't talk about that. It's always bombing Damascus. I wish Putin would step in there and do a little bit more when it comes to that, because he's got interests there. But Putin's very patient.
He's patient, cautious. So while we still have some time, I'd like to address this idea that Putin's in on it. And the people who say Putin's in on it, like the types of evidence they produce, are really, what is it? It's very spurious. So they'll show a picture of him standing with a few Chabad Lubavitchers, right? So you take a picture with somebody, and that means that the two of you are best friends, you're allies, you're scheming together. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. There are people who just their entire life is about getting pictures with famous people, and it doesn't really mean anything. Now, and here's the other thing about Chabad Lubavitch. Chabad Lubavitch it's like a fun target for counter-Semitic, or however you want to say, for people who are alarmed at Jewish power. It's a popular target because, frankly, the Chabad Lubavitchers are very honest about the Jewish religion. They're very transparent about the Jewish religion, whereas, the Reform Jews and whatever, they try to make Judaism almost into – it's like just another sect of Christianity except without Jesus. Otherwise, it's just the same. It's just without Jesus. Whereas the Chabad Lubavitchers, they're not disguising what's in Judaism. But Chabad Lubavitch is – when you look at the Jewish power structure as a whole, and most people – don't, and most people are kind of incapable of it. But if you look at a Jewish power structure as a whole, and it's got a whole bunch of different parts, and I'm always saying it's very decentralized, well, what's the role of Chabad Lubavitch in it? And it's not the brains, it's not the muscles, it's the gonads. They produce a lot of babies. They produce power resources other than population. They produce humans, but they don't produce money. They're economically, within the Jewish power structure, within the Jewish community, they are parasitic. So they are supported partly by other Jews. They seek and receive donations from rich Jews, but then they also use the power of Jews to get a lot of welfare and support from the public sector. So a lot of these Chabad Lubavitchers in America are living on public welfare, especially in these communities outside of New York or inside New York, because the men they're not economically productive. They're studying Talmud all day. So they're not productive. And so within a society, a culture like the Jews, how powerful can a non-economically productive section be? right? They're not the ones writing the checks. They receive checks. They're supported because they have the babies. And these the secular Jews who run Hollywood or Wall Street, like especially the ones in Hollywood, so many of them are gay. They're not producing babies. And you know, the ones in academia are largely, you know, they have small families. But the Chabad Lubavitchers are just producing tons and tons of Jews, and that's their role. So they're not the people giving orders. And so a picture with Chabad Lubavitch isn't showing that, because Chabad Lubavitch doesn't run the Jews. It certainly doesn't run Israel, and it doesn't run America. Okay, they receive charity, they receive donations, they receive support from other Jews and from people that Jews influence. But anyway, so that's the type of thing that they'll show to say, oh, Putin is run by the Jews. Look, he has a picture with Chabad Lubavitch, rather than looking at facts on the ground, like what you've mentioned about the support from Putin and from Russia of Bashar al-Assad and preventing him from being regime changed. And there's tons of examples you can use like that. You can, you know, another great example would be him kicking out the Jewish oligarchs that had dominated Russia after the dismemberment of the Soviet Union. So I kick it back to you, Paul.
No, I think that's all correct. And I think there's a sort of a fundamental lack of understanding of what it would be like, and empathy to what it would be like, and, you know, to be Vladimir Putin in his position. It's very easy to, you know, view this from an insular lens, you know, through a kind of a Western, you know, worldview, albeit, you know, cognizant of Jewish interests and, you know, Jewish power. But, you know, then to take it a step further, you know, to believe that Vladimir Putin is in on it at all, I just think it's bordering on paranoia. You know. And,
you know, you could say like a Western lens, even more specifically, a dissident right-wing American lens. You know, so...
Exactly. That's a good way of putting it, sort of a dissident American lens. And unfortunately, I think it's part of the nature of the beast. And I don't mean to be critical of Americans, you know, but I think it's the nature of the beast of being brought up in America. I mean, you know, I don't think really Americans have a grasp of the world generally, you know, and they're so propagandized. And the state right. itself from very early stages has been, you know, influenced by Jewish interests. So, I mean, it's a complete haze over there in terms of reality. It's detached from the rest of the world. It's known only material wealth and prosperity for the most part, the dominance of the dollar, childlike demonization of anything other, you know, including Muslims and all this type of thing. So, you know, it's a very distorted view of the world. You know, I think, you know, is it 5% of Americans, you know, have a passport? I think it'd be a good thing if Americans traveled more, and you know, were able to expand their understanding of the world, and that not everyone is American. Like you said, it's like, you know, it's seen through a dissident lens. You know, so it's very much, and I think there's, you know, there's a lack of understanding as well of just, you know, Russia, the Soviet Union, the history there. Obviously, we understand and we are opposed to, you know, Bolshevism and the Soviet Union and everything that happened there. But, you know, if you contextualize someone like Vladimir Putin and even the Russian people themselves, well, they have an attachment to some degree to that. They had grandfathers, uncles, you know, whatever, who fought for the Red Army and in some ways, you know, thought they were fighting the good fight, you know, notwithstanding some of the horrors that were perpetrated by the Red Army, but not everyone participated in that. So there's a very kind of, as usual, there's a very simplistic kind of childlike worldview presented to the Americans. Everything's black and white, and that's reinforced constantly. And it's the same here in our media, where we, you know, we demonize someone like Vladimir Putin or Iran. It's, you know, evil versus good. You know, the Israelis, the Zionists are constantly promoting this idea to the American audience, really. You know, it's civilization against barbarism. You know, everything is much more nuanced than that, you know? It really is. And, you know, even biblically, you know, when you had leaders of different countries, sometimes God used evil leaders for his purposes. They, you know, I find it interesting, for example, that when Tucker Carlson was interviewing Vladimir Putin, Carlson has ostensibly, since he finished up Fox News has moved into a more spiritual kind of realm, a journey. He's been reading the scriptures and, you know, reassessing his life and things like that. And he asked Vladimir Putin, does he see his role as a role, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, as a role of being an instrument of God, you know, in all of this, pertaining essentially, I think, you know, where Carson was essentially alluding to, that Russia might be on the good side of the spiritual battle here, which I believe. I think that war in Ukraine is essentially a spiritual battle between more, you know, Christian, wholesome, you know, attitudes against the, you know, the global homo LGBTQ Ukraine. And Putin said that he didn't see himself like that. You know, he was very detached from that kind of idea. Sorry, I'm being a bit long-winded here, but the point is, you know, things are a lot more complex than that. You know, even people that God will use, they don't have to be saints. They don't. You know, God understands people, and you know, he takes people as they are. You know, he doesn't. You know, he deals with history as it's presented to him. But you know, the West are fed this kind of childlike narrative, as if it's a Superman movie or something. You know, it's like General Zod, you know, versus Superman. I mean, this is the sort of thing you should grow out of when you at least get into your later 20s and 30s. If nothing else, you can understand your own soul. You know, none of us are entirely, you know, righteous, and you know, and few of us are entirely evil either. You know, there is that sort of battle that goes on within your soul. People are complex, and so are geopolitical leaders, and so are nations. But that's anyway. The point is that kind of worldview is fed to a very childlike kind of audience in America, and constantly reinforced. You know.
Right. So there's a couple more examples of the lack of context that American dissident right people who are critics of Putin. A couple more examples. One is that he's killing white people. And
that's another one. He's killing white people in Ukraine. Yeah.
He's killing white people. And if you're an American and dissident right, so you identify as white. Because what if you don't identify as white, what can you identify as? English or part English or, you know, part Irish and part German or whatever. So the identity is white. But in Eastern Europe, the identity is not white. And the Poles have their longtime ethnic grudges. Eastern or Western Ukrainians there are these grudges. And, you know, they're not looking at each other as fellow whites. Number one. And then the other thing regarding that issue is that Putin for 8 years was exercised extreme restraint while the Ukrainian government was killing 14,000 ethnic Russians in the Donbass. And, you know, it wasn't until having exhausted all other possibilities that he embarked on what I'm sure he hoped was just going to be a quick strike into Ukraine, which would lead the way to a negotiated settlement. But because Ukraine is fundamentally, at a fundamental level, it's run by Jews, it's not even run by Ukrainian whites, and these Jews in the State Department and through their agent Zelensky have no problem just throwing hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians into a meat grinder.
Well,
these Ukrainians, you know, maybe they resist. I feel sorry for them, but you know, they're going into it, and what else can Putin do? So that's regarding one thing. I don't know if you want to respond to that. I had one other example I wanted to raise.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, you can blame Putin if you want, but you know, you may as well then be part of Western media when you ask the kind of gotcha question of Vladimir Putin. He invaded Ukraine, or are you supporting that? It's just devoid of the context of the whole situation. So you may as well take that line if you're going to say, well, isn't Vladimir Putin killing all Ukrainians? Well, I think if you look at what's going on, if you were to consider the notion that there was an ethnic cleansing operation going on in Ukraine, then you would have to, you know, lay the responsibility and the blame at that of, again, Jewish interests in the West, considering how much that they have provoked the situation. In fact, I've thought that myself when you look at how many Ukrainians are dying, that maybe that's the whole idea, just to, you know, kill as many Ukrainians as possible. But that is not the fault of the Russians. Like you said, Putin is a very measured guy. He tried everything to stop that war, and I think it's with a heavy heart. It's with a heavy heart that there's the Ukrainians dying. But once they've made that decision that there's no one to talk to, you know, once you're at a war, then you have to, you know, be committed to that. And unfortunately, you know, hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians have died and many more millions have fled. But that is not the responsibility of, you know, Putin. That, again, is a responsibility of Jewish interests in the West. Victoria Nuland, Zelensky himself, a Jew, you know, yeah. So, yeah, you know. And that's consistent, so, I mean, you know.
Well, I was going to say, the war of attrition, which is the war of meat grinder, was clearly not plan A or even plan B. The other thing I wanted, and people often say, well, he could have just decapitated the leadership. He could have just, you know, bombed all of central Ukraine, or he could have done this, could have done that, you know, he could have blitzkrieg. But he couldn't do those things and retain the support of, you know, the rest of the BRICS countries and the rest of the countries. He would have been, and he needed that.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read one. This product has been a godsend for my father, who suffered from a heart attack about 2 years ago. He was prescribed medications for his condition, which was so serious, he almost died. But he hasn't been able to afford most of the medications. After researching alternatives that were more affordable, he tried Extendivite. Since taking it, he has consistently lower blood pressure and experiences less angina. We are currently on our fifth bottle. I enthusiastically recommend this product, and I am grateful that it is available. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Well, hello, folks. This is Mike Gatti, the Rebel Madman at Republic Broadcasting Network. If you are searching for your inner rebel, it can be found at the Dixie Republic. It's the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to thedixierepublic.com to view all of their Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through their extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in their Johnny Reb gun and leather shop. Now remember, DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
BlackoutCoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
But he couldn't do those things and retain the support of you know, the rest of the BRICS countries and the rest of the countries. He would have been. And he needed that support in order to overcome the sanctions. Those sanctions were aimed to take out the Russian government, and they failed. And they failed because Putin had a restrained response, and he had successful diplomacy, and was able to bypass the sanctions.
Yeah, so you know, and also it's just not in the Russian, you know, doctrinal anatomy, you know, to take out leaders. They have certain standards there. This is not Israel we're talking about. This is not a rogue state.
This is not a Jewish state. You know, Putin, it's very, everything's very sort of, you know, by the book there, and they have their own, they have certain standards of how they do things and things they don't do. And that's one of the things that they've been heavily condemning the Israelis for, is this decapitation strategy, you know, because the Russians just don't indulge in that thing and that sort of stuff. And they warn that, you know, that what's good for the goose is good for the gander there. You're opening up a Pandora's box if you're going to, you know, you're leaving yourself vulnerable, you know.
Yeah. And then the other thing, we only have a couple minutes, but the other thing I just wanted to mention was American dissident right people will fault Putin because he honors the Red Army victory that you mentioned earlier. And from the, you know, some quarters of the American dissident right, Hitler and the Nazis were the good guys, and anybody who fought against them were the bad guys. And okay, even if you want to accept that, still, what you've got the situation where officially 27 million Soviet citizens died in World War II, and the real number is probably a good deal higher than that. So you had massive deaths, and you know, well, people might say, but yeah, well, they were fighting for communism. Well, in the American Civil War, the people in the South were saying, "I'm not fighting for slavery. I'm fighting because the Yankees brought a war down here." And for the Soviets in the Red Army, they could say the exact same thing. I'm not fighting for communism. I'm fighting because the Germans have invaded. They're here. And
yeah, exactly.
And you know, you have to look at it in that context. American boomers, you can't even convince them that America was not necessarily on the right side in a war where America only lost like 350,000 people at most, whereas the Soviets probably lost about 100 times as many. Do you really expect families that all lost people to say, well, actually, we were the bad guys and the Germans who invaded us were the good guys? It's not going to happen. Whether you like it or not, whether you support, you know, the Nazi side during the war or not, it's not going to happen. That's the reality. Putin has to deal with reality. He doesn't have to deal with dissident right people from wherever their fantasies. He doesn't have to deal with that. That's not his problem.
Yeah, and I will say one more thing just before we finish up. You know, the accusations by, you know, said dissident right types are that, you know, we are kind of like, you know, Putin's fanboys, or, you know, we see no harm in Putin in any way. Well, it's not really a case of that. It's partly because it's like the enemy of my friend. That's part of it. And also, it's just like Putin, you know, what he's doing in Russia, spiritually, religiously, economically, with BRICS and all this, it represents a challenge to, you know, the system in the West that we abhor and we are tired of. And, you know, it represents things which are actually more aligned with sort of, you know, for want of a better word, right wing or conservative beliefs. You know, he doesn't indulge in this promotion of LGBTQ or, you know, blurring genders or any of this sort of stuff. You know, so there are things that, you know, about what Vladimir Putin is doing that I admire. But that doesn't mean that I, you know, that I see Putin as like, you know, some sort of saint that, you know, has come to save the whole world. I just admire what he's doing, his courage, and the direction he's taken that country. It's the opposite direction of the way the West has gone, sadly, you know. So, but, you know, again, there's context here. It doesn't mean that you're, you know, you see only good things in Putin. I mean, Putin, again, you need to understand the position of this man. He's trying to, everything he does is for the interest of the Russian Federation, and unapologetically so, you know.
Well, I want to thank you for having me, Paul.
Gilad Atzmon says the essence of Jewish power is the ability to prevent the discussion of Jewish power.
Jewish power requires anybody in politics to understand it and know about it, but never talk about it.
My Awakening really sums up with the very best evidence, the facts and the truth about race, and the fact that race drives history, and the truth about the Jewish question.
The younger you get, the greater the percentage of people who identify as alphabet soup, you know, LGBTQ, RS.
This woman, she's like, oh yeah, I identify as a koala 2 years ago. And I'm like, what?
A koala?
What?
Maybe if it was Quickie Koala, that might be cool, but otherwise, you know. How about an N-word pass? Have you ever received an N-word pass from any of your black friends?
Biden invited a drag queen to come for the signing of the Respect for Marriage Act. It's the Respect for Anal Sex Act. So, yeah, I mean, let's just call it like it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show.
Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.